Their new book is out today. It's Injustice, How Politics and Fear Vanquished America's Justice Department. That does it for our show. I'll be in St. Louis on Friday, speaking in the Q&A after the film Steal This Story, Please, plays in two theaters in St. Louis. Check our website at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
State laws ban abortion for 1 in 3 women across the country. They are forced to remain pregnant or travel out of state for the care they need, depending how far they have to travel, whether they drive themselves or take other methods of transportation, how long they may have to stay, and countless other factors like lost wages or childcare, plus the cost of the medical care itself. The financial burden can be overwhelming, if not impossible to afford. To see each of their stories and to learn about the real cost of having to travel for abortion access, visit bansoff.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. The time is 6 o'clock. Oh, I neglected to mention that WUSB in Stony Brook broadcast at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM. As well as over the internet at WUSB.FM. And with all that said, it's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday night. Time for another edition of Off the Wall. Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yo. Hi.
Happy Election Day.
Happy Election Day, Emmanuel.
It's something, you know, it's an off year, I know that, but it's still exciting. A lot going on.
What do you think, E? What do you think so far? Did you participate?
I did.
Are you ready?
I did. I have some thoughts. I have some thoughts, but I did sort of a doubleheader today. I did two things. I went to a doctor's appointment and I voted. one right after the other. They're pretty quick. But the funny thing is, my doctor's appointment was at University Hospital here on the Stony Brook campus. I hadn't been there in a few years. You know, a lot can change in a few years. You know, I've pretty much grown up with that place. I've seen it rise above the trees and become, I think, the tallest building on Long Island. And throughout my college years, I often, along with many other people, would explore the hallways of both the Health Science Center and the hospital. When I went there today, boy, everything was different. Everything was different. You know, you park your car in the parking garage. The parking garage wasn't where I thought it would be. The entrance was not where you had to drive all the way around. The entrance is now in the back. Okay, I figured that out pretty quickly. But then going in, I'm used to just walking in, you know, walking in, going to whatever floor I want to go to. That's how I would do things on campus in the middle of the night. If somebody I knew was in the hospital, just I would visit them. There's a walkway that gets you there. No problem. Okay. First thing, there's a concierge that greets you now when you go in the door, wanting to know where you're going. And then they tell you, okay, now you go through security. Yeah. You have to go through a metal detector now to get into the damn hospital. That's never happened before. And of course, I didn't make it the first time. I had to, you know, take things out of my pocket and all that. That's insane. Going to a hospital, you have to go through a metal detector. And, you know, there are many entrances to the hospital, so I'm pretty sure I could get in and avoid that. But, you know, I wasn't up for challenging authority at that very moment. I made it through. And then the next step was talking to somebody who would then take my ID, get all this information, get my phone number, and give me a sticker. And then finally tell me how to get to where I was going, which, by the way, was completely different than the way it was last time I was in there. The hallways are different. I mean, it looks really nice. It's done up really well. But what have we become? I mean, you know, you can't walk into a hospital without having to answer all these questions and go through a metal detector and be looked upon with suspicion. It's, you know, it's Stony Brook. It's a university hospital. It was, you know, always a place that you could just go to. And, no, it's not like that anymore. I just wonder what has changed. Have we become super suspicious? Has the world really changed that much? And you know, if it's, you know, a hospital, well, then, you know, why not a classroom too? You know, why not the student union building? You know, where do we put these things? How do we decide what is a target and what is not a target? Everything can be a target. So yeah, that was kind of weird.
Yeah, it sounds weird, but it makes sense because the hospital would be a place where if something happened, injured people would be brought there. So you don't want it to become a target itself.
But they're already injured. I mean, why would you attack injured people? Yeah, I'm sure there's reason behind this. I'm sure it makes sense, but I'm not used to it. I'm just not used to that.
Right, but it's a facility that needs to be protected for a lot of different reasons because there are people already trying to heal there, mm-hmm. and were there some kind of incident, they would probably need that facility to triage those injuries. So
that was the case before, you know?
Right, but they've leveled up their access control.
What I'm asking is it has the world really changed, or has our impression of the world changed?
Our awareness of the world has changed.
I think our fear of the world has changed, but whatever.
Or
I can't,
the marketability of that fear.
I can't change this. I know that, but it's just, it was dramatic because, you know, the last time I was there was, what, 3-4 years ago? And it's changed that much in that short period of time. So that's, it was kind of sobering.
Well, hospitals are really like high tech these days.
Hey, there are other hospitals I can get into without going through security, by the way. I'm not going to tell people where they are. I should be able to do that, but I'm not going to. And, you know, plenty of places you can go into.
They have a lot of technology, a lot of different tools now, and they've really, like, heavily invested. And we've heard anecdotally about just the types of technology and things that you have at your disposal and that are used on you as a patient in those places. So if you've got all this bulk of technology, I mean, how hard would it be to implement a security procedure like you described where you get a sticker? I remember getting those kinds of stickers when we went to like City Hall and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because it's the same kind of thing. Or like if you go to a courthouse,
They take your picture and you wear it on your
jacket. You'd wear the sticker as like, and just says visitor.
And you realize you've been wearing it all day.
Yeah. And then you forget about it and then you leave it somewhere and then it fades.
Uh-huh.
Well, yeah. So it stands to reason these places just, they can easily sort of implement it alongside all the other sort of technical stuff they're doing in these places. So
I don't know,
it's not
easily.
Hard to, I don't think it's hard for them to say
it changes, it changes the whole dynamic of the place. It becomes more of a, you know, a fortress than a place of healing.
No doubt. Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely like it presents itself as something that has a that's gate kept, that's, you know, not easily accessible. Without an appointment, without a reason to be there, without someone to visit, as you said, you know, you can't just drop in.
I just wonder, you know, how much trouble would I be getting in right now if I was a student today? Because, you know, the things I would do when I was a student, and we're talking about, you know, in the 1980s, like I said, middle of the night, let's explore the hospital, let's explore the tunnels, let's explore, you know, this part of campus that nobody ever goes to. That's part of the campus life. That's part of being, you know, a young person and learning things. Sure, you could cause damage, but you didn't because that's not who you were. And you can, you know, people can always figure out a way to cause damage. I don't think that's the point. But when you have this, you know, always being watched mentality, I think it makes you less healthy. I think it makes you looking over your shoulder more, not actually saying what's on your mind, not wanting to take chances or explore or ask questions. Exactly the opposite of what a campus should be. And I'm not saying, you know, Stony Brook is any different than any other campus right now. It's just, it's sad that we as people are, you know, have moved so much in that direction.
It is. It is an interesting observation. And I'd say also, like, at that cost, is it actually effective? Like, is it making it a safer environment for patients and people that visit there alike? There's probably some drawbacks, many drawbacks, but do people actually benefit as a result of all of this, or is it just for show? I think that's another worthy line of questioning and critique of mm-hmm. the whole thing. But what happened? Like, how did it go? Did you get out of there? I mean,
well,
like,
obviously I got out of there. Yeah. I wasn't worried at any point.
It wasn't too much more of a hassle after you went through that.
No, it surprised me because I wasn't expecting that.
Did you see the outside? Like, they're doing this thing with the facade. It's like they had the black tinted glass and now they're doing like, it's like a reflective glass.
You know how much money is spent just renovating places constantly? I'm talking about homes, stores, hospitals, schools. You know, just be happy with what you have. You know, the ancient Romans, the Colosseum worked for a long time. Why can't we do the same thing? Why do we have to tear down Shea Stadium? I'm sorry, I'm going to keep going back to that. It's a hot spot for me. But
well, change is never ending. It's in every corner. This thing's constantly evolving and transforming.
And devolving and falling apart as well.
But yeah, degrading. Disintegrating.
But I want to talk about something else that was inside the hospital, because this is kind of funny. You know, my appointment was very quick.
Sure.
And I was on... okay, so what you have to understand about the hospital is that the fifth floor is the main floor. Don't ask me to explain why that is. It just is, and you're going to have to accept it. Fifth floor, main floor. That's where you... When you walk in, you're on the fifth floor.
So that's ground... That's zero is five.
I didn't say that. I said it's the main floor. I'm not going to say zero equals five. I'm not George Orwell, all right? All right, so you walk in, you're on the fifth floor, and then you have to go to the floor that you were on. I was on the fourth floor, so one floor down. All right, so, you know, I don't remember taking the elevator to the fourth floor. I just did, and I was there, had my appointment, left.
So you got off at -1.
You know, I'm going to turn your microphone off if you keep trying to confuse me. So basically, I wanted to leave, so, you know, I was on the fourth floor, so what do I do to leave? I want to go to the fifth floor. So I get in the elevator, right? And, you know, I noticed this on the way to my appointment. I do remember this. There weren't floors to indicate when you were inside the elevator. I was like, how do I press my floor? It didn't matter because I arrived at the floor before I had a chance to even figure that out. But going back was not so easy because I got in the elevator and it shot right past fifth and went way up high. And, you know, I addressed the people in the elevator. I said, You know, this is probably a really stupid question, but how do I indicate what floor I want to get off at? Is it like, you know, in your mind or something? I don't know how far they've advanced with technology. But apparently, they have this new system because the old elevator system didn't work. And they even have a sign outside, which I didn't see. Intelligent elevators have arrived. Yes, they've arrived. The elevators walk through the door. This building now has Schindler's Port Technology Destination Dispatch elevators. Oh, at last, because the one thing elevators couldn't do was get me to where I was going. I needed that to be improved. The port system is simple and easy to use. Yeah, it was way too simple for me because I wound up on the upper floors of the hospital, which I wasn't supposed to be at. So I'm not really sure if security-wise that was a good idea. But okay, it's as easy as 1, 2, 3. And that's not as easy as people think it is, but whatever. Okay, so step one, and this is what I missed. Choose your destination via the touch screen or swipe your RFID card. I have no idea what RFID card they're talking about, but yeah, outside on every floor, there's a touch screen, which I did not see. And you're supposed to press the button of the floor you're going to. And when you do that, this voice barks out at you and tells you where your elevator will be arriving. Step two, read your elevator car assignment. I guess it also shows up on the screen. Step three, and this is the best part, walk to your assigned elevator and enjoy the ride. Who enjoys a ride on an elevator? You know, other than a toddler, maybe. So that's a keyboard I'm showing you.
Oh, I see. Yeah, it has like shaded button icons that you can press.
But they don't know who's getting off at what floor. They can't tell. You know, you press that button, and it's going to show up and bark out. You know, that floor is arriving now at this elevator. It took me 4 minutes to get one floor up. Yeah, that is not an efficient system. I'm sorry. I wanted to use the stairs, but, you know, I don't think I'm allowed to do that.
So you're telling me like from the inside of the elevator, there were
no buttons.
No,
what, just so the door open and fire or something? Or,
so
I don't know.
They got rid of all the buttons
they're
on
all
the
gone.
Inside.
Yeah, button farm in the sky. They're done.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So that benefits them somehow.
Who needed this? Who needed this system? I mean, it couldn't be simply go in an elevator, you press a button. You know, I already got in the elevator, and now I'm just along for the ride, and I have no say in where I'm going. You know, that can't be advantageous in any way.
Say, okay, you're talking to a colleague. Mm-hmm. You step away, you say, okay, I'm going to go. I've selected the floor here. My car is ready. I'm going to go enjoy my ride. Then the door closes, they're a wise guy, and they start tapping all the different floors. They operate what floor you're going to go to from outside, and then you're off on
a, no, it a doesn't, big, it does, okay, I know this
stops
much.
Shaking.
It's not going to affect the elevator you just got off.
Okay.
It's going to affect the next, you're going to be calling elevators that will be going to all those floors. So you'll be annoying the people that are standing on the floor waiting for the elevator. But they've probably just gotten on the elevator that you got off, so. I'm sure they thought that through.
So, exactly. So how'd you make it out of there?
Well, eventually, like I said, 4 minutes later, I made it to the fifth floor and got out of there.
Wow.
And then I had to deal with the parking garage, which, you know, that was also... Okay, so here's the thing. You get your parking validated, right? Which is just basically them stamping something. I didn't see how the automatic machine was going to know that they stamped and validated my parking. So I gave it to the attendant. And apparently that really got her angry because I wasn't supposed to do that. I was supposed to give it to the machine. But I didn't think the machine could tell that this stamp meant that it was validated. So I was erring on the side of caution, and I erred wrong. Or I erred properly. I don't know. Anyway, so...
It's like you've never been on the U-Bahn.
You know, a simple thing. Just going into a building that you've been in a lot before and leaving turned into something completely different today. And... I don't know. You know, I see what it's like. You know, you're aging in this society, and just the world gets more and more baffling. And
Did you have your appointment while you were in there?
I did. I mean, that was the shortest part of the whole thing. Oh, wow. Okay, so then I went and voted. That was fun. That was. You know how many people I voted for?
No. What was your ballot like?
It was a big paper ballot.
Was it rolled up, a big scroll?
No, they give it to you in a big sheet, and, wow. and then you walk over, and then you have this felt pen that's tied. Well, the pen isn't tied; only the cap is tied to the polling place. So you can steal the pen, but you can't steal the cap. So you go there and you fill in the little bubbles, and then you go to the fax machine, put it in there, and it feeds it in. Stand around for 30 seconds. It says your ballot has been successfully cast.
So
get out of here now.
I'm going to guess a dozen candidates.
A dozen candidates. A very good guess.
Was that good?
No, it's terrible, Kyle. Wow. Terrible. You want to try one more guess, and then I'll tell you.
22.
Oh, you'd like to think that. Okay, see, I have a policy. I only vote for people who are running against other people. Okay, even if it's somebody in a party I like, if they're the only candidate, I won't vote for them because that's not an election. I don't know what that is, but it's not something that I want to play a part in. What, I walk in there and just say, yeah, Frank, huh, okay.
Right.
There's no other choice. I'm just going to vote for Frank because so like, Frank put his name there.
So you didn't vote for stuff like unopposed things like the sheriff?
The sheriff. Okay. I didn't know we had I know we had a sheriff's department. But, I mean, what does the sheriff of Suffolk County do? We have the Suffolk County Police Department. We have so many other police departments in various places, including here on campus. All right. And what does the sheriff do? I know somebody's going to email us and answer my question, but it'll never take with me. I don't understand the point of a guy who is the sheriff of Suffolk County. Anyway, he's been putting up signs, or his people have been putting up signs all over to vote for him. It's kind of weird to vote for a sheriff, but sure. But then I found out he's not running against anybody. Nobody's running against the sheriff. It's not because, you know, he's intimidating, although he might be. I don't know. Don't know who he is. But why is he putting up signs if nobody's running against him? He's going to win no matter what. I mean, that's got to be a big waste of some funding someplace. So, no, I didn't vote for the sheriff. Sorry, sheriff. I did not vote for you because nobody's running against you. Unless, you know, 10,000 Daffy Ducks are written in and somehow they win. You're not in danger of not getting elected. There were so many cases of this, mostly judges, but quite a few others as well. You know, the only candidates where I was able to vote for anybody was a county legislator and town clerk. Two people. The entire ballot, there's only two people I could vote for because they were running against somebody else. Everybody else was running unopposed, or they were both Republican, Democrat, and everything else. That's not an election. That's roll call. That's, you know, there's nothing there. So I don't play that game.
So wait, were there any kind of like levies or funding,
yes,
budget measure things?
On the other side, you know, a lot, okay, of people forget to turn over their ballot, but on the other side, there were two proposals.
Now, okay,
I'm going to skip over proposal one because, you know, it's about Essex County and we just don't have time. But proposal two is kind of interesting because that is, I'm going to read it to you, and I want your opinion on this. And listen to how it's phrased and tell me what you think of the proposal after I read it to you. It's called resolution number 601-2025, adopting local, you know what? None of that matters. Okay. Shall resolution number 601-2025, adopting local law, number whatever, a charter law to revise the county's term limit law to close potential loopholes created by the adoption of New York's even year election law and avoid the need for taxpayer funded special elections, and to amend the term of office for the office of county legislator from 2 years to 4 years to ensure compliance with New York's election law without the need for three elections in 4 years be approved. Now, do you have an opinion based on what I said so far? Because there's a little more I can read.
I basically, it sounds like they're trying to make sure the term has one election and it's 4 years in 4 year intervals, and they're using a lot of language to say it's wasteful to,
yes,
have three.
You got it. That's exactly what they are doing here. Now, basically, the even year thing is a statewide change in the elections, where even years will be where most of the races will be decided, as opposed to odd years like this one, where you know only local offices are filled. Less people show up. This ensures more people will show up. Now, Republicans are against it because less people show up and vote Republican, or actually more Democrats show up on the even years for the big offices, governor, president, things like that. And more Republicans show up for the elections that don't have major races. So that's why they're, you know, and my position is if you can get people to show up and vote, why is that a bad thing? That's, you know, that's what you want. So basically, you surmise correctly that they are they seem to be pushing to have less elections, because what's going to happen is people who get elected this year will have to run again next year because they have to run in an even year. So they're saying, you know, this will ensure compliance without the need for three elections in 4 years, but lengthening the office term from 2 years to 4 years for a county legislator. Now, okay, I'm going to read you a little bit more of a description here. A yes vote would avoid potentially requiring legislators to resign midterm and the need for taxpayer-funded special elections. A yes vote would also amend the term of office of county legislators from 2 years to 4 years, thereby ensuring compliance with the New York even election year law without the need for three elections in 4 years. Did you hear anything bad about that? Because to me, it sounded like all good, you know?
Yeah, but it just seems like they're overcompensating, so it makes me a little suspicious.
A yes vote would avoid potentially requiring legislators to resign midterm. That's bad, right? And the need for taxpayer-funded special elections. Also bad. And a yes vote would avoid those two bad things. A yes vote would also amend the term of office of county legislators from 2 years to 4 years. Is that good or is that bad? Well, hold on. The sentence is not finished yet. Thereby ensuring compliance with the New York even election year law without the need for three elections in 4 years. So if you were thinking that expanding that term from 2 years to 4 years was bad, your doubts were preempted by the two good points that were raised immediately after that. Ensuring compliance with the New York even election year law and no need for three elections in 4 years. Okay, but in fairness, they tell you about the no vote as well. A no vote would mean that legislators could be required to resign prior to the end of their term, causing the need for taxpayer-funded special elections. Well, that sounds bad, doesn't it? They have to resign before the end of their term and cause a need for taxpayer-funded special elections, and would also require that elections for county legislators be held three times in 4 years in order to comply with New York's even-year election law. Well, that's also bad. Now, you know, I get to read this over several times in the polling place there. I've never seen any kind of a resolution or question on a ballot read so biased. That is incredibly biased because they are pushing the yes vote. It's pretty obvious. All the good is explained in the definition of the yes, and all the bad in the definition of the no vote. Did you get that too, Kyle?
Yeah, a little bit. Just as you, when you pointed it out, I might have had to read it a couple times to infer that myself, like on my own.
It screamed out at me that this is, you know, they are trying to get a yes vote. So, of course, I voted no. You know, I was kind of upset by this. So I went to my friend Gemini and asked them their opinion on this. I said, am I wrong in seeing advantages to a yes vote clearly stated? Quote, without the need for three elections in 4 years. Yeah. While the disadvantages to a no vote, taxpayer-funded special elections, are also stated without offering a different perspective. It seems to be quite biased in favor of a yes vote. Well, Gemini said that is a very insightful observation. I like getting complimented by artificial intelligence. And you are absolutely right to question the framing. The way ballot language is drafted, especially for propositions tied to legislative action, can often emphasize the benefits touted by the measure's proponents. In this case, the language focuses on avoiding the immediate bad outcomes that proponents claim will result from the new state law if Proposal 2 is defeated. Here is a breakdown of why you perceive the bias and the different perspective that is not included in the official summary. Not included in the official summary. That's key. The perceived bias in the ballot question. The ballot question explicitly highlights the administrative and financial costs of a no vote, while the yes vote is presented as a straightforward common sense fix. The downside to the no vote, it's directly linked to instability and taxpayer cost. Legislators could be required to resign prior to the end of their term, causing the need for taxpayer-funded special elections. This framing presents the administrative stability and fiscal prudence of the yes vote as the central argument, which often sways undecided voters. The different perspective was not got into. The main argument for a no vote, not included in the ballot summary, centers on the principle of accountability and local control. The no vote keeps the term length at 2 years. Opponents argue that shorter terms hold local legislators more accountable by forcing them to face voters more frequently on their local record rather than being swept up in national even-year election cycles. So that was not stated at all. And artificial intelligence got it immediately. So my question was, is there any recourse? And in New York, as in other states, there is indeed legal recourse if the language used in the ballot measure is deemed intentionally misleading, inaccurate, or biased to the point of potentially influencing the outcome. And I think that's quite clear here. But the problem with all this is that you need to file your appeal before the election. Yeah, the major obstacle in challenging ballot language is timing. Challenges must be filed in court shortly after the ballot language is finalized by the Board of Elections or the county legislature's legal counsel. And this likely came from the county legislature, which has a Republican supermajority. Courts are extremely reluctant to intervene once ballots have been finalized and voting has begun. That's because any change would require reprinting ballots, causing massive disruption to the election schedule. So, it's going to be very interesting to see where this goes if that particular resolution gets a yes vote and if people have any kind of strong feelings about whether or not they were misled. But that just raised alarm bells for me. It was a bit upsetting. But that's minor compared to some of the things that are going on, particularly New York City. The New York City mayoral race, tonight's the night. We find out if Mondani wins, if Cuomo loses, or if Cuomo's tactics pay off. And lately, his tactics have just been awful. They really have been. I mean, today I was hearing him saying that socialism never works. It's never worked anywhere in the world. I don't think he knows what socialism is. If you go to Scandinavia, that's socialism, and it works quite well. Thank you very much. There are elements of our society that are socialist in nature, libraries, fire departments, things like that. There are all kinds of examples. Now, hardline communism doesn't tend to work. That's quite true. Although, does China work? It's not pleasant, but you could say that it works. Sometimes bad things do work. But that's not what any of this is. That's not what Mondani is at all. If you listen to the guy, if you see his ideas, if you watch how he interacts with people, you witness somebody who is completely comfortable with disagreement, who respects opponents, and intends to be a mayor for the entire city, including the people who did not vote for him, which is something that our own president could really learn from. He strikes me as somebody who will stand up to injustice, whether that's injustice of civilians or from Washington, D.C. This is a guy who has gotten arrested for civil disobedience and for basically standing up for what he believes in. The arguments against him are just so shallow and childish. And you hear the same arguments that Trump is using against this guy being used by Cuomo. And in fact, Trump endorsed Cuomo. It's really getting to the point where I can't tell the difference. I mean, yeah, I know there is a difference, but my God, you guys really should be trying to not align yourselves so much that somebody who is a tremendous threat to our way of life is actually saying, yeah, you know what? You're the better option. You're doing something wrong if that's the case. And Cuomo doesn't seem to realize that. That and just his ignorant remarks or agreement with some of the horrible things said about Mamdani regarding 9/11, regarding being Muslim. And, you know, I think New York has grown enough where we don't need somebody like Cuomo to be telling us what's what. And, you know, seeing the news coverage, you know, you'd think Osama bin Laden was coming and running, you know, for the office himself. And that is what we have to deal with. And that's what the Democrats have to deal with. Now, the Democrats have to figure out how to take a stand and stick with it and not constantly second guess themselves. Because, you know, here you have somebody that people are excited about, that people are rallying behind, and you all don't want to get involved. You're scared of that. You're actually scared that, well, maybe that'll be used against me by Republicans. You should hope so, because if they do use it against you, you're doing something right. You know, you're basically supporting somebody who is winning by double digits, is getting people to show up and vote, getting young people involved. Aren't these the things that you've been saying we have to do? And okay, here it is. Are you going to figure out a way to convince yourself that no, not this time? Let's just have Chuck Schumer for longer, and Hakeem Jeffries. Yeah, that'll hopefully nobody notices us. Come on, this is an opportunity, and you know you're not going to agree with everything, and I would be very cautious of anyone who did agree with everything a candidate said. But there certainly should be enough here. There should be enough for you to be excited and realize that time for change is here. Is that just a slogan or do you mean it? Because this is going to be change. Will it all be good? No. Things are going to, not work, and things will work. And he will undoubtedly change perspective on the things that don't work. But, you know, how successful his term will be, that's dependent on how he is received. And I think it's a real opportunity for New York to lead and to show the rest of the country that, yeah, you know what? A progressive, a social Democrat can actually be a viable candidate and an effective leader. So yeah, all these people that they see that he is a socialist, and right away they think he's Stalin. Boy, you guys, you need to go back to school. You need to go back and learn a little bit about, you know, what all these words mean, because you're not getting it right, and you're just spreading ignorance, and you're doing the work of Trump. You really are. Now, Kyle, I know that we've been watching New York One because we're getting it again. New York Spectrum and Optimum got into some kind of a fight. Optimum used to carry New York One, and then Spectrum said, you know what, you're not going to get it anymore, and then they took it off. And they even made it so that you can't see it online if you're an Optimum customer. Yeah, I wish these big corporations would just get along. But on election day, they open things up. So on YouTube, you can find live coverage from New York One. And I know that there has been coverage throughout the day of the election of various people voting in New York City. I know we're not in New York City, but still, it's an exciting race. It's a pivotal race. And since I was out most of the day, I was wondering if I might have missed anything.
No, I didn't think that there would be much resulting. Most of the coverage I saw was like those last campaign stops, the stumping of the candidates, saying a lot of the sorts of things that you described, like Cuomo's attacks and stuff, and the sort of final push and different activities of where candidates were in town today trying to get people out to vote, and then sorts of last minute endorsements and the overall sort of turnout, like what that was shaping up to look like as the polls open.
The turnout though has been really incredible. I know for early voting it was something like four times the amount as last time, so that's huge. And I'm not sure when they find out how many people have actually voted on election day, but I imagine that's going to be pretty high as well. People are excited by this. They're involved. And no matter what side you take, you know, whether it's for Sliwa or Cuomo or Mandani, the fact that you're participating, that's the point. And if we're having a dialogue, if we're talking about issues, we're all better for that. So we should never shy away and say that this is a bad idea. This guy is dangerous. This guy is, bad for the city. You know, if so many people are basically saying they want to try something like a different direction, maybe we should listen. I mean, we certainly have been listening when it goes the other direction. So let's stop being afraid when the pendulum starts moving the other way.
Yeah, I hope the identities are actually like an afterthought. They're like the last thing that you think about when you think of someone like Mondami winning and actually leading, because the job is very different than this sort of building up of a persona that people could get behind. His actions, like the actual day-to-day operational stuff, is what's critical and what people want action on. And that's the stuff that matters. And I think maybe that's like what you were hoping to see, or that there's aspiration in seeing that, yeah, someone could be someone that you might not have thought deserved or could occupy an office, but their difference doesn't hinder them from actually doing the duties of the job. That'd be great to see. Great to see in a moment when the prevailing winds have sort of wanted us to believe that only a certain type of politician can do anything, and anybody else is some sort of phony or like not eligible if they don't go fall in line with a certain political attitude. And that's just like totally wrong. The whole idea is our system is cooperative. Like, we can work across differences, and that needs to be reiterated in this moment, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. Those certain types of people, well, they've been running the show for a long, long time. It's not working. So obviously something needs to change. Now, there are some people who believe that we should move the country further to the right, that where the Democrats should, which sounds ridiculous to me because, well, you know, that's what the Republicans have been doing. So why would the Democrats join in on that to be more Republican? No Republican is going to vote for a Republican-ish Democrat. It doesn't make any sense. But you will wake up a lot of people who are feeling marginalized and have not been listened to, who are further in the other direction. So be different.
Yeah, that may have like been tempting a year ago to say, like, oh wow, maybe we should the constituents have changed, so maybe we need to move in some way. But I don't think that's right. If the constituents make a, let's say, bad choice, you don't want to move towards their bad choice.
Yes.
You need to offer something that differentiates from a poor choice to a better choice and make it clear enough that the better choice is in their interests and it's not necessarily a fatal choice to have made a bad choice ever before. And that's the whole point of it being a continuous process. You get to go back to the polls with a different point of view and maybe choose other than you have ever in your life. Like, that's totally, you're right. Maybe that isn't for you, but the vote isn't fixed. and people react based on their the situation on the ground for them.
Donald Trump did not get 7 million people to go into the streets in the last couple of weeks to demonstrate for anything. And the opposition did do that. And I suspect, I don't know this for a fact, but I suspect that if you were to say certain names of the people running in the mayoral race in New York City to those groups of demonstrators, if you said Zoran Mondani, I think the cheers would have been louder than if you said Andrew Cuomo. Just do. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just get more of a sense that there is excitement and there is hope with that candidate. Whether or not it's well-placed, that's something that remains to be seen. And, you know, he hasn't even won yet, so maybe Cuomo will pull a rabbit out of a hat or some other trick. Who knows? Thing is, you know, Cuomo has all this baggage, and that can't be good for him. And it's going to be very depressing for people if he somehow is able to overtake Mondani. So we'll just have to see what happens, and we'll probably find out in a few hours. They say the voting will be counted fairly quickly. But there's more going on. In California, there's the battle to control the U.S. House. They don't have elections representatives this year, but what they do have is a proposal that could erase as many as 5 Republican districts. It's in response to what Trump is doing in Texas by erasing Democratic districts. And that outcome of the vote tonight will reverberate into next year's midterm elections and beyond, with Democrats hoping a victory will set the stage for the party to regain control of the House next year. A shift in the majority would imperil Trump's agenda for the remainder of his term at a time of deep partisan divisions over immigration, health care, and the future direction of the nation. Kind of important. And so California is a very pivotal place tonight. And as Governor Gavin Newsom said, God help us if we lose in California. And he's not wrong. Democrats need to just gain 3 seats next year to take control of the House. That's how tight it is. The thing that gets me, again, with people that are always doubting and fearful and not wanting to fight back and take dramatic steps, because the other side is fighting dirty. They're not following the rules. They're not listening to court orders. They're flouting the Constitution. Look, you can continue to do the right thing and play by the rules that they're not playing by anymore, and you will lose. You will constantly lose. Or you can start fighting back and saying, if this is the game you want to play, we'll play it better and we'll win. And then what will you say? We didn't change the rules. You know, we didn't basically say that Democratic votes or Republican votes don't count. We didn't say that first. You guys did that. And that's why we are responding in kind. At some point, you have to fight back when you're being attacked by a bully. And you have to figure out what that means. You have to figure out the method of doing that, of outsmarting, of defeating. But it's not going to just simply be saying that that's not fair. You can't just keep saying that's not fair and then living by those rules. And that's, I think, what has been happening. Also, Virginia, there is a gubernatorial race there. And that's a pivotal state as well, as far as who gets to run things. New Jersey. New Jersey has their own Blakeman running for governor there. The Republican, the guy is just like Bruce Blakeman from Nassau County, who is also running tonight for re-election. Honestly, I hate to say this, but I don't have much hope for Nassau County because they've made such bad decisions over the last few years. I don't know what would change to make them make a good decision. But I think Blakeman is going to get reelected. I really do think that. And hopefully New Jersey does not make the same mistake, because there's just no reason to do that other than buying into hatred and fear and prejudice and all that. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting night. It will be. All right. Did you hear about this this other story? We only have a couple minutes left, but I did want to touch upon this. There was this horrible incident in the UK. Some maniac went nuts on a train and stabbed a bunch of people. You heard about this, right, Kyle?
I believe so. There was a video.
Yeah. They had a train derail, too, I think, the next day. Not a good couple of days for the UK as far as trains. There's a rail worker who's been credited with saving multiple lives during that mass stabbing. His actions on the Doncaster to London's King's Cross Station service Saturday evening were described as nothing short of heroic. His name is Samir Zitoni. He remains critically unwell. That's a condition over there. Critically unwell. I feel like that's how I am usually, critically unwell. But yeah, obviously much more serious here. But he is stable. That's the good news. Mr. Zitoni has worked for the train company for more than 20 years. And in a moment of crisis, he did not hesitate as he stepped forward to protect those around him. His actions were incredibly brave. We are so proud of him. All of our colleagues who acted with such courage that evening, our thoughts and prayers remain with Sam and his family. We will continue to support them and wish him a full and speedy recovery. It's thought that Mr. Zitoni blocked the attacker from stabbing a girl, leaving him with a gash on his head and neck. And the thing is, you know, when this story was breaking, I don't know if you noticed this, but the headlines, particularly on BBC, were very clear as to establishing the nationality of the person involved, which was a British citizen, saying UK national or English national was accused of a mass stabbing on a train. You know, a week or so before that, a criminal was accidentally released from prison. And again, BBC and many other outlets reported the nationality of the person, saying that this person was an immigrant from a different country and was released accidentally. And when they finally found him, they immediately deported him. Okay, you know, I'm not taking his side or anything like that. I don't, you know the history of this person, but he's not the one who broke out of jail. They released him, and then they punished him more and sent him out of the country. I don't know. It seems like that's a reaction based on fear and hatred more than anything else. Not even looking into whatever his crime was. I'm sure it was probably something serious based on the urgency of getting him back. But the point is, there seems to be this emphasis on defining where somebody is from quickly. And I know in the UK, the reasoning for this is because crowds are very quick to develop and to spread false information and to start accusing one particular nationality of being responsible for a crime than somebody who was born in the country. So that's why they say very quickly, this person was a British national.
Yeah, that's actually been a real issue this year, even. That basically riots had formed over anti-immigrant sentiment.
And
they're like flash mobs.
And it turns out the people accused of the crime that they're rioting about is a UK national, a British national. So, you know. But then, of course, they turn to, okay, well, are they black or are they Arab? You know, even though they're born in the country, it still somehow applies. It's really ugly. And I think in that particular regards, they're actually ahead of us as far as the ugliness goes, because we haven't quite gotten to the point of rioting mobs targeting particular ethnicities, you know, just based on our own fear and misunderstandings and hatred and all that. The reason I bring all this up is because the hero that I mentioned just now, and not mentioned in the BBC story at all, I looked up a little bit about him and wound up on a page called bbntimes.com. Samir Zitoni, best known as Sam, credited with saving multiple lives during a mass stabbing, was Algerian born. Yeah, Algerian born. He was born in Algeria, a North African nation, rich in history and resilience, where the name Samir means good friend or companion in Arabic. And he immigrated to the UK in his younger years. He embraced the multicultural fabric of British society. His Algerian roots likely installed a deep sense of community and hospitality, values that align closely with the customer-facing role he would come to excel in. Friends and colleagues describe him as a family man with a gentle demeanor, always ready with a smile or a kind word. His family speaking out after the recent incident emphasized his role as a steadfast provider and protector at home. Why don't we see stories like this more often? Why don't we talk about the nationalities and the backgrounds of the people who are doing such good in our societies, instead of jumping on whatever it is we can find when there's something bad happening? Because there's a lot more good. A lot more good is happening on a daily basis than bad, as far as individual people. And instead of just assuming, as Trump would have us believe, that immigrants are committing more crimes, are more violent, are more dangerous, well, why don't we look at the actual people that are out there and think about, you know, the truth and celebrate that? How does this make those rampaging mobs feel? Is this guy the exception? Does it somehow not count? So, yeah, that's something to look for in the headlines. See if people's backgrounds are being focused on a little bit too much when the news is bad and not at all when the news is good. Hey, you know, it's Radiothon here at WUSB. Want to remind people to support this radio station that allows us access to the airwaves and the ability to speak our minds and share all kinds of different perspectives. If you listen throughout the day, throughout the week, you will hear so many different bits of music and storytelling and news and sports and all kinds of fun things. But it only exists because of the backing that we get. And if you go to WUSB.fm, that's our website, you will find links where you can pledge monthly amounts, $5, $10, $20 a month. You know, not very much at all. Cup of coffee, sandwich, what is that? And that adds up through the course of a year, and that keeps us going. That keeps us going. And you can see there are so many forces out there that want that to stop. You see what this administration has done to PBS and NPR. Well, you have to admit that we probably would not be on their good list. And that's where you come in. That's where individuals come in. So WUSB.fm, that's a place to show your support. Any final words from you, Kyle?
Yeah, support community radio everywhere. But definitely WUSB should be at the top of your list if you love this programming and other stuff that airs on our frequency and at WUSB.fm.
Yeah.
And share some comments if you have any. OTW@2600.com.
That's right. OTW@2600.com. That'll reach us, and we will see your comments, your thoughts, and maybe we'll even read them on the air. We do encourage people to keep listening to the radio station because, as I said, it's such a variety, and it's inspirational. It really is to see what students are up to these days, to see what community members are up to, and just to see so many people start realizing that radio is still where it's at, despite what you might hear in the industry. People do listen to thoughts, to comments, to news. All right. That's going to do it for us tonight. We'll be back next Tuesday night, 6 to 7. I did it again, didn't I? And again, OTW@2600.com is our email address. We will see you next week. Good night. On the fence.
unfinished words, flying like birds, high in the sky above my deck chair.
This is WUSB 90.1 FM in Stony Brook and W297BM 107.3 FM in Stony Brook.
Hey everyone, you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook.